You know, I was going to share a message tonight called Why I Love Passion City Church. But next week, we're starting a series called Anchor. And I know a lot of you weren't a part of our journey way back when we were a homeless church moving around the city. But we shared some messages around these three values out of which Passion City Church sort of springs and finds its focus: radical grace, extravagant worship, the glory of God. And so we're going to rally back around, like, because most of you weren't on that part of the journey with us. It's going to be such a great way to start the year. But today I was just going to share a talk about why I love Passion City Church. But in the last few days, that's morphed a little bit. And I just want to share for a few minutes tonight about something even higher than that. And I want to share a message with a new title. It's called Why I Love Jesus. And that's really what I want the message to be today. You know, whenever you come through something like this, people want to know, who are you? Where'd you come from? What are you about? And in that moment, if there's anyone looking or anyone watching or anyone wanting to figure out who we're about, I just want to make sure that in this moment, they hear us say, we're about Jesus. That's what we're about. He's who we're about. We love him. We adore him. We owe our very lives to him. And that's why we love him. And so I just want to get into just a couple of things tonight. If you have a scripture, we're going to look in the gospel because that's a good place to look and see why we love Jesus. But we're going to read from John chapter 5, a passage that we've read before. But let me just shrink it down for us a little bit tonight. Here's why I love Jesus. I love Jesus because he is extraordinarily great. But even though he is great, he is not too big to be completely aware of every one of us and to be able to meet us where we are in life and to do in our lives what no one else can do. Do you believe he's big tonight? Do you believe this Jesus we've been singing about, that we've been worshiping tonight, is big? He's unrivaled in the whole universe. That's what Paul said. Before we look at John chapter 5, look at this passage, Colossians chapter 1. It's a passage we've been in a lot. But look what Paul says about Jesus. He says right before this passage that Jesus has redeemed us, those of us who put our faith in him. And that's so beautiful. He says in verse 13 of Colossians 1, for God has rescued us. Isn't that awesome? That God's on a rescue mission for all of us if our lives are broken apart or our dreams have crashed or we find ourselves in places that we don't know what to do or we have a longing to be connected to God, but we don't quite know how to get there. That God's always moving toward us. It says he's rescued us from the dominion of darkness and brought us into the kingdom of the Son he loves. That's what God does. He comes and snatches us up out of our lives and joins us up with this beautiful story that Jesus is unfolding. And then about Jesus, he says in verse 14, in whom, in Jesus, we have redemption, the forgiveness of our sins. I know for me, that's my story, all wrapped up in those two verses, that God kind of came and he found me and he's rescued me from me and he's rescued me from a life of less than his very best for me. But then quickly he turns the focus back to Jesus and look what he says about him in verse 15, for he's the image of the invisible God. That's Jesus. So can I put him instead of the pronoun? Jesus is the image of the invisible God. So if you want to see God, look at Jesus. If you want to know what God is about, the scripture says, look at Jesus. Don't look at this person or that person or that person. If you want to know what God is like, just look at Jesus. He's the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. That implies that Jesus has been there from the beginning. Jesus was the one who instigated the beginning, and we see that unfolding in the next part. For by Jesus, all things were created. Things in heaven and things on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by Jesus and for Jesus. Jesus, isn't this awesome when you just put his name in there, is before all things. And in Jesus, all things hold together. I think the implication is there, it's possible for our lives to blow apart. It's possible for our relationships to fall apart. It's possible for our dreams to fragment. It's possible for things to be blown up. But Jesus, he is the one that holds things together. And then verse 18, Jesus is the head of the body, the church. Isn't that awesome to think today that Jesus is in charge of the church? Nobody is in charge of the church. Jesus is in charge of the church because it's his body. Jesus is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead. You know what that means? That means Jesus did die for the sins of the world, but he was raised from the dead by the power of God. He's the first one to come back to display that God has power over death and over the grave and over all the power of that. Jesus is the firstborn from among the dead. He's almost the only one to experience that because many of us have experienced that through faith in him, but he was the first one to be raised up from the dead. So that, this is the obvious conclusion, the duh part, so that in everything, not in one thing, not in a little thing, not in 10% of something, not in one day, but in every single thing, that in everything. So think about that. People who understand the first part of this. I was rescued. I was transferred. I was forgiven by a great and awesome Jesus who is the maker of the heavens, was before all things, who holds all things together, who leads forth the body, who is the first one raised up from the dead, who has a supremacy in everything, so that I then can understand in my everything, he, Jesus, might have the supremacy. That just means that in all things, if we're not pushing Jesus up to the front, then we've missed who he is, and we've missed the power of his grace in our lives. And then here's the conclusion, the gospel. And through Jesus, excuse me, I missed this, verse 19, for God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in Jesus, and through Jesus to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through Jesus' blood shed on a cross. Isn't that powerful? So you've got the whole story there, and you see the greatness of Jesus. All things were created by him. You know, I don't know for what reason, but for some reason, I was reading the news quite a lot this week, and I ran across this, and it grabbed my attention, and I went for it. The title is, maybe you saw it. Let me know if you saw it. It says, largest structure in universe, large quasar group challenges cosmological principle. Anybody see that? Wow, that's powerful. That's pretty powerful. Okay, I'm a larger nerd than I thought I was. Can I tell you a little bit about it since you missed it, and I know you're not going to go find it for yourself now? Let me just read you a tiny bit of this, and then we'll come right back to Colossians. Astronomers, so just let's all understand, this is not written by pastors. This is not written by a bunch of Christians. Astronomers have discovered the largest known structure in the universe, a clump of active galactic cores that stretch 4 billion light years from end to end. Now, we won't get into that because I know you're tired of all that astronomy business for me, but let me just suffice to say a light year is really, 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 really big. So 4 billion light years, we're talking about a large clump of active galactic cores. The structure, quoting again, is a large quasar group, an LQG, a collection of extremely luminous galactic nuclei powered by supermassive central black holes. Anybody? Amen, a right on, a something? But check this line out. This particular group is so large that it challenges modern cosmological theory, researchers said. Quoting now, while it is difficult to fathom the scale of this LQG, we can quite definitely say it is the largest structure ever seen in the entire universe, end quote, according to lead author Roger Clowes of the University of Central Lancashire in England. Quoting again, this is hugely exciting. No pun intended. Not least because it runs counter, listen to this, to our current understanding of the state of the universe. Quasars are the brightest objects in the universe. For decades, astronomers have known that they tend to assemble in huge groups, some of which have been known to be more than 600 million light years wide. So I just say that because I love science. And I love articles like this because this is now the headline. We had no clue something that this big could exist. In fact, what they're saying in the article is what we believed about the structure, nature, and size of the universe was such that something only 1.2 billion light years wide could exist in the universe. Based on our total understanding of the universe and the cosmological principle, nothing bigger than 1.2 billion light years wide can exist. And now they're like, hello, we had that wrong because this thing is 4 billion light years across. I know you're going, okay, that sounds really, really big. Let me put it down for me, okay? The Milky Way galaxy where we live, where you live, 100,000 light years across, 100,000. If you want to, you know, check me out down to the detail, could be 120. Some scientists will tell you that. Some will go as high as 160. But average time, people just say it doesn't matter. It's 100,000 light years. Now, that's not the solar system where we live. That's the whole Milky Way galaxy. You wouldn't even be able to put our solar system in here and see it. This guy, this group of quasars, 100,000, 4 billion light years, this group of quasars. And we're reading right here, it's either real or it's not, that by Jesus, all things were created. Things in heaven and things on earth, things visible and things invisible. So I just want to bring us back to that before we jump into the end of this tonight. Jesus is a quasar creator. Jesus is a universe maker. Jesus is big. Jesus is like got a comprehension of things that none of us can really get up to and imagine. Jesus blows up the cosmological principle. Jesus is having mercy on all of us as we build more and more bigger telescopes to try to understand what's going on. But even Paul, who never had Hubble or never had the Sloan or any of the other things that have really helped us understand what's going on with this large quasar group, he knew, even with the naked eye and the revealed heart of God, that there is a Christ, and this Christ is from the beginning. And from the beginning, he was a creator, and he created all things. And the last line says, all things were created by Jesus and for Jesus. So forget the quasar being created by Jesus. You were created by Jesus. I mean, maybe you could say, I don't think I was created, so I don't even think I was created. I just think I happened, and I'm here. Well, okay, but if you feel like you're created, you were created by Jesus. So a quasar maker made you. A universe maker made you. A God of all great power made you. The God who was around before the very beginning made you. The firstborn of all creation made you. The one who has all the supremacy, he made you. That answers the first basic question that all of us want to know, and that is, does my life count? And the answer is extraordinarily so. And it's not because somebody told you you were cute. It's not because somebody told you that they liked you. It's not because somebody gave you a raise or you earned a degree or you had a certain amount of money or a certain amount of this or a certain amount of that or you could accomplish that. You and I have extraordinary value because we were made by Jesus. And then we have such a beautiful purpose because the last part of that verse says we were made by him and what? For him. In other words, when Jesus made you, he thought, you and I, we're going to have a relationship together. We're going to have a life together. Me and you and you and me. And then he's inviting us in to have the opportunity to live our lives knowing him, to live our lives for him, and to live our lives in the story that he is writing. God is great. Jesus is great. But he's not so great and he's not so big that he doesn't know you. And though he's big enough to make a universe, he's not too big to know your name and to know everything about you. And to love you. and to give his very best for you. Jesus, though he's great, he does what no one else can do. And that's the beauty of the gospel. This little story unfolds in chapter 5 of John, so strong. Just tears my heart up every time, honestly. It says in verse 1, sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for a feast of the Jews. Now there is in Jerusalem near the sheep gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by 5 covered colonnades. Here, so we're going to get the picture of this big pool, the pool of Bethesda. Here, a great number, so not 1, not 2, not 10, not 12, but a great number of disabled people used to lie. You say, well, what kind of disabled people? The blind, the lame, and the paralyzed. Now notice we go right to verse 5. That's because there's extra manuscript evidence that goes in between there. And if you look down on the footnote, it says in verse 4, from some of the other manuscripts, from time to time, and this is all supported by the story, from time to time, an angel of the Lord would come down and stir up the waters. The first one into the pool after each such disturbance would be cured of whatever disease he had. So therefore, that's why there's a big crowd. Around all these 5 colonnades, they're blind and they're lame and they're paralyzed people, and they're all staring at the pool and they're all waiting for this moment because we don't know when this angel comes. I don't think there's a sign on the door to the pool of Bethesda that says the next stirring will be at 3:15 and the next one at 5:30 and there'll be one at 7 and one at 9:20 and another one at 11 p.m. No one knows if it'll be today or tomorrow or in the middle of the night or early in the morning or this month or next month. They just know that when the water stirs, if you're the first one in, you're healed. You know, for me, I always look at scripture and I think, you know, why is that? Why this story would have been a whole lot better if the story had read, and when the angel came and the water stirred, everybody got in, got healed. Doesn't that sound like a way better story? And you're like, why is it that just the first person got in? That sounds so unfair for all these other people. But man, the story is going to flip upside down in just a second. And so to this pool, with all these people, most of whom don't have a chance. Think about that. Think about how many people don't have a chance. How many people don't know how to help themselves? I'm thinking about the blind people. Do the blind people have somebody with them, or do they just hear the commotion and then they know the water stirred? Is there a sound when the water stirs? But they're blind and they think they remember which way was to the pool, but I'm not 100% sure if it's that way or that way, but I gotta go in the dark because I gotta get there. I'll be sensitive to people who have sight issues, but can you understand a blind person running toward stirring waters with the hopes that they're going to be the first one in? What are the odds of that? I mean, what are the chances of that? And to this pool, Jesus comes. Isn't that beautiful? Quasar Maker shows up to the pool. And I love what happens. That's why I love Jesus. Verse 5. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" Does that seem like an odd question to anyone else but me? Let's see. I'm an invalid. I have been like this 38 years. I'm at the pool of Bethesda because somebody gets healed here every so often. Yeah. I'd like to walk. That's what I'm thinking. I'd like to run around. I'd like to jump up and down. I'd like to join life. I'd like to quit getting made fun of. I'd like to be normal. I'd love that. Yes, that's what I would like. That's what I want. He says, but I got a problem. He doesn't know who Jesus is. He doesn't know Jesus made the large quasar group. He just knows he's a guy who asks a question, and so he answers him, "Sir, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. That's why I love Jesus. Because Jesus always finds the person who can't help themselves. People who got it figured out don't need Jesus. People who don't want to walk again don't need Jesus. People who are already walking don't need Jesus. People who think, you know what, I think this time I got it. Thank you very much. But, you know, last time I came in second, but I think I figured out how to get there and come in first this time. I mean, imagine coming in second, by the way. How awful is all this? Two guys go in, one down here and one down there. It looks like they both go in at the same time. It's like, you know, photo finish and send it up to the replay booth. And everybody's thinking, I got it. I'm in this time. But no, at the end of the day, this guy jumps out and he's healed. And you got to figure out how to get out, which is harder than getting in. And he says, I got nobody to help me when the waters are stirred. The gospel is that God, though he is great, doesn't think too highly of himself to come down to us when we feel in our lives like there's no one to help us get where we want to go, namely back into a relationship with God. And then the worst part, he says it, while I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me. I mean, that just rips your heart out. I'm scurrying, I'm trying, I'm however he's doing it. And every time, somebody else gets in there. And I love what happens next. Verse 8, Jesus said to him, he could have said a lot of things to him. He could have said, hey, I know the angel. Get real close to the pool. In fact, lean over the pool edge. Right when I know the angel's coming, I'm gonna wink. When I wink, you go. You'll be airborne right when he does the thing. You'll be the first one in. He could have said that to him. He could have said, I'm strong. Look at me. I'm a carpenter. I can hold you. I'll just stand and hold you over the pool. And as soon as the waters ripple, man, I'm dropping you right in. He could have said all kinds of things. But the thing he said is so powerful. Here's what Jesus said to him. He said, get up, pick up your mat, and walk. At once, the man was cured, and he picked up his mat, and he walked. I guess we've all been to Sunday school too long. That just didn't go over very well. Now, the rest of the story is amazing, which we won't get into, and that is that everybody was totally hacked at Jesus. Because he broke a religious law and he did all this on the Sabbath. And so they just grilled him. You cannot do this on the Sabbath. This guy shouldn't be picking up his mat on the Sabbath. You shouldn't be healing anybody on the Sabbath. Don't you understand it's the Sabbath? And Jesus is like, don't you understand that there are five colonnades full of people here that are blind and lame and paralyzed? This guy's been with it 38 years and he can't get in the water. He's not getting in the water today. He didn't get in the water yesterday. He's not getting in the water tomorrow. So here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna give a new message today. I'm gonna hint to something brand new today. I'm gonna open up a whole new story in this moment. And here's the story. You don't have to get into the water. I'm going to bring the pool to you. You don't have to make it to the pool. I'm going to bring the pool to you. I'm going to bring the life to you. I'm going to bring the grace to you. I'm going to bring my love to you. I'm going to bring my forgiveness to you right where you are. And he says to the guy, get up and take up your mat and walk. And at once the guy was cured. It is a picture of a great and powerful Jesus. When Jesus walked into the pool of Bethesda, he had already created the universe. Imagine that. I've chosen to come into humanity in a human body. I've chosen to humble myself and take on flesh and blood so that I can understand you and you can know that I identify with you. But I haven't forgotten how to make a quasar. And so when I'm looking at this guy, I'm not going, oh no, I hope this works. He just says, you want to be well? All right, let's do it. don't need an angel. I don't need waters to stir, because I'm the Son of God. And when I spoke, and a large quasar group came into being, I can speak to you, and you can have a brand new life. Last week, one of the highlights for me, besides seeing our church dance, which is sometimes awesome and sometimes awful all at the same time, was having Samantha here. You guys remember us talking about Samantha last week? She was here at 11 and 4, but then she wasn't here for 6:45, but I showed you a picture on my iPhone of her in worship. Samantha didn't even know who Jesus was 10 days ago. But she, through a weird set of circumstances, met him at Passion 2013. And we read a little bit of the story that the girls that had shared with her wrote out. And Brad read that last week as part of us celebrating Passion 2013. Most of you, obviously, by your response, heard it. But since then, Samantha went and wrote on her Facebook page her story. So she's not like ashamed of the gospel. She just wanted people to know, this is what happened to me. Do you mind if I read some of it for you? She writes, and I'm always trying to go back before put it into English and then letting it be in Chinese English. It's really better in Chinese English. So if it sounds like I missed a word, I didn't. She says, I am a Chinese student in Lehigh University. Now, Lehigh is where smart people go to school, just to let you know. I did not go to Lehigh University. Would not, could not go to Lehigh University. And traveling in Atlanta because of the warm weather, well, at least warmer than Pennsylvania, and MARTA, the transportation system. So I didn't know. I didn't know people came to Atlanta because of MARTA, but that's pretty awesome to know. This is my first time couch surfing. This is so crazy. I was staying with Zaza. She was very nice and heartwarming. She picked me up from the subway station, drove me around, gave me a tour in many beautiful neighborhoods. The next day, she dropped me off at the Coca-Cola Museum, and my amazing day began, exclamation point. I visited the museum, parentheses. I've tasted all kinds of soda all over the world. I was so full after that. And the aquarium. Fishes are incredible. Thank God for creating all these creatures on the earth. After all the visiting, I went to CNN building and wanted to start a tour. And then I noticed that my phone was about to die. I have to charge my phone because I need to make phone calls and read maps. I went to the Welcome Center and all the souvenir stores in CNN, but it didn't work out. I think I'm understanding she's looking for a phone charger. She can't find one in any of the stores. Frustratingly, I went to the Omni Hotel, which is connected to the CNN building. I went to the front desk, and yay, they had a charger. I sat in the lobby reading and waiting for my phone to be charged at least 50% full. A few minutes later, two beautiful ladies came sit beside me, Chelsea and Jackie. They started a conversation. I told them about my experience of couch surfing, and they thought it was so cool. They talked about Jesus and God. I was very interested, so they gave me a Bible. Well, here are some parts of our conversation. Are you here for the conference, Chelsea asked? No, I'm not. What is it about? They told me about the conference, about the End It movement, and about Christianity. That's why thousands of people are here, they said. Oh, I thought they were here for a CNN tour. We all laughed. Do you have any plans for tonight? No, I don't have any plans. Yep, that's me, traveling alone with no detailed plans at all. I just wanna let things happen and let it be. Surprised or disappointed, I take them all. Do you wanna join us? We'll see if we can find a way to get you in. Yeah, why not? They found a way to get me in. FYI, I'm striped purple. Okay, guys, this is how my story begins. I thought the conference was people sitting there listening to somebody talking. However, it wasn't. The conference was more like a concert. The songs were so beautiful and touched my heart, the bottom of my heart. I see people raising their hands in the sky. I didn't know why, but I feel like doing the same. I tried to feel something. Yeah, I felt it. It went through my whole body and soul. I started to think, who brought me to the States, to Atlanta, to Chelsea and Jackie? It's God. God planned all the details for me. I've waited for this moment for a whole 20 years. Yeah, I feel it. I keep my arms in the sky. Someone's gonna dance for the first time. Hear the music. Hear the music. And then she has her antiphonal responses. Are you referring to me? I'm gonna dance on God's dance floor for the first time. We won't move without you. We won't move without you. She writes, I won't move without you. I will not have the chance to meet Chelsea and Jackie without you. The God of angel armies is always by my side. I remembered all the luck and happiness ever happened in my life. I thought about my great parents, and I thanked them for giving me the opportunity to come to the States. I thought about my best friend at school. She inspired me and encouraged me to look for my own way and control my own future. I thought about Zaza. What a great host I've met. I thought about Chelsea and Jackie. Thank God for sending you two beautiful and outgoing ladies to me. All the songs touch my heart. God gave me the luck to meet some amazing people. After the conference, we went to meet with family, to the community groups and family groups, for those of you not a part. They put their hands on my body and prayed for me. I think just if you're not used to what we're doing here, probably like on her shoulder or on her arm or something like that, just so you'll understand, okay? It was just a little simple, you know, like we do when we're talking to people, you know? They put their hands on me and they prayed for me. And I cried. Everything happened in the few hours. Everything that happened in the few hours has never happened to me before. I haven't been so deeply touched. God, you planned all this for me. I'm happy you did. I cried. I cried because of happiness. Then the group leader, Brad, asked, who would like to say yes to Jesus? I stood up, exclamation point. Like they said, now she's referring to the little note that they handed to us. Like they said, no one made me stand up. She stood up on her own. Something pushed me, not physically, but mentally. I felt like I have to do this. I have to stand up for this. I did. The next day during the conference, Louis shared my story with thousands of people. I was shocked. I hold Chelsea's and Jackie's hands tightly. I hope they felt what I felt at that moment. But more importantly, listen to this. I'm glad my experience could inspire people. God, you planned all this. So I'd like to say a few words to those who helped me. To my new family, the Cunninghams. Family that goes to Passion City Church. We have spent only 2 days together. You must be kidding me. I must have met you and your three awesome girls somewhere, sometime. Even though I'm not with my family in China, I'm with all of you, my whole new family. I know I'm not alone. I can have a tea when I'm cold. I can have medicine when I'm sick, and I can have a Bible if I want to learn. I love you, Mom and Dad, my three sisters, Taylor, Mackenzie, and Carter, and of course, Lucy. How can I forget you, little doggy? And then she closes with this. There is a fire in my heart. I want to give it to every one of you. Let's warm and light up the world. There are so many feelings that I want to share and words I want to say. Things never stop changing. What only doesn't change is God's love for us. He takes care of us all. God bless you, Samantha Lee. What a great, great story. What a great story. That's why I love Jesus. It's not only when you can't help yourself does he do what no one else can do, but when you're not even looking for him, he finds you and brings you into a relationship with him. Quasar Maker, who saw a student sitting on a couch charging her phone. Quasar Maker, who led her to Atlanta and just coincidentally led her into 60,000 people just like her, all going to a tour together at CNN. And all along, he had a rescue plan. I mean, what kind of rescue plan? The kind of rescue plan that would cause a young 20-year-old girl to feel something in her soul that she never felt in her whole lifetime. And to know there is a God and he knows my name. And he's given me something that I describe as a fire in my heart. And what I want us to celebrate today is Jesus. Because Jesus has a rescue plan for every person who wants to find the kind of life that completely fills up the heart and brings our soul to life. And he gave his life for our sin. He was buried dead, but raised from the dead. And he comes and finds us. He asks us the same question. Do you want to be well? Do you want to live? Do you want to have hope? Do you want to feel alive? And when the answer is, yeah, but I got nobody to help me, he says, now we're at the right place. And he just speaks to us and says, put your faith in me, and I'll bring you from death to everlasting life.